In celebration of the 90th anniversary of the signing of the Social Security Act on August 14, 1935, Big Sky 55 organized a three-day, 10-city, 1,200-mile tour around Montana featuring national expert on Social Security, Alex Lawson, Executive Director of Social Security Works. KGVM was there at the Bozeman Event Center in the Masonic Lodge on August 14, 2025 to record his talk. He's introduced by Trent Bulger, Executive Director of Big Sky 55, and Elizabeth Marum, Bozeman Board Member of Big Sky 55.
My name is Trent Bulger. I get the honor of being the executive director of an organization called Big Sky 55 Plus. Big Sky 55 Plus means Montanans that are mostly 55 years old and older, but you can be any age and join. I was doing my spiel at, I think, a hands-off rally a couple months ago, and my 10-year-old was standing next to me, and she had heard me do my spiel about 50 times. And she walked around the table and put her name on the dotted line. So she is our youngest member. She's 10. We have members in their 90s and I think in their late 90s. So anywhere from 10 to 90, you can join. We work together to find solutions for people of all ages in Montana. My board, and I've got a board member here, Elizabeth Marum, who is your local board member, and she's a great local organizer. If you don't know her, get to know her because she's involved in everything. And then we also have, in my mind, a special guest. Elaine Shoyan helped start Big Sky 55. She was involved in the initial discussions about creating a group like this. So Elaine is here too. Today, this is our eighth stop in 1,000 miles. There are three things that Big Sky 55 really focuses on, that the board really wants me and my staff to focus on. And by the way, I've got Faith Scow, our political director here. She is great. Not only does she handle our political arm of our organization, she keeps me in check, which is really important. But the board wants me to focus on three things as an organization. One, providing high quality and timely information to our members. And that is really important in what is kind of a crumbling media environment here in Montana. That's part of what we're doing today with bringing Alex in, is we're going to provide you a very in-depth look at what's happening with Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. But secondly, we work to lobby people in power to make the right decisions for Montanans. That means at the federal level, that means at the state level, that means at the legislature, that means at the municipal level, that even means at the school board. Because we need to work at all of these levels to make Montana what it needs to be. Get to know your elected officials, because you do have great elected officials here in Bozeman, and they will help you out. The third thing that we do is, when you don't have great elected officials, we work to find elected officials that will make the right decisions, and we will support those elected officials that do make the right decisions. Those are the three things that we do as an organization. I'm going to turn it over to one of our board members, Elizabeth Marum, and she's going to talk a little bit about why we're here today and introduce our speaker. Thank you.
I would like to welcome my old friend and a person with whom I've worked this whole Social Security tour in 2012, going around the state, and Alex was one of the people that I worked with. And so I'm so glad you're here to meet my old friend, Alex. He will tell you everything you need to know about Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth, Trent, Big Sky 55, all of you. It's important that the real facts about what Washington, D.C. is doing to the people of Montana and every state, everyone across this country. But what you're going to see is that Montana gets hurt disproportionately by each of these things that are done, because it is a rural state, and it is a disaster that I am going to, unfortunately, spend a bunch of time telling you about. 90 years ago, FDR signed the Social Security Act into law. And I want everybody to remember their history. Social Security was born out of the Great Depression. It didn't come out of rosy times. It came out of a global economic collapse that the world had never seen before. A Wall Street-caused collapse of the most basic functioning of not just the U.S. economy, but the entire world economy. And if you read contemporary accounts at the times, they literally wondered, they were flummoxed. They thought maybe it just doesn't work. Maybe the American experiment of a democracy run by the people had run its course. You had fascism rising in Europe, totalitarianism rising in Soviet Russia. The idea that democracy was the path forward was not at all a settled debate. But luckily, you had visionaries like Francis Perkins, Wilbur Cohen, FDR, Eleanor Roosevelt, and the other New Dealers who understood that there is a path forward, a uniquely American path forward, something that understands if your society is based on wages, which it is. Workers work for their wages. If those wages are disrupted, you need to have a system in place to ensure that doesn't mean what we saw in the Great Depression, which is astronomical levels of unemployment that seize the entire thing up and drive it into the ditch. So what they did is many things. I'm going to go over a few of them. But the beauty and the importance of the vision of Frances Perkins, it wasn't like she didn't know it was coming. There were decades and decades of warnings and organizing saying, if you let Wall Street and the billionaires, if you let the copper barons, we just came from Anaconda, have everything and the workers have nothing, there's only one thing that can happen. The whole thing fails. And also an understanding that whatever billionaires are missing, whatever emptiness they're trying to fill with the ungodly amounts of money, they will never stop on their own. They have no that's enough in them. It will always go until they drive the world economy into the ditch. So Social Security was created. But also the minimum wage was created. And I invite everyone, if you haven't, and I can look around and I see an audience of people who have read FDR's speeches, but if you haven't, read what he talks about with the minimum wage. What he talks about is a society where an honest day's labor equals a living wage, a wage that a worker can live on. That's what the minimum wage was set up for. What else did the New Deal entail? Unemployment insurance. If your society revolves around wages and people lose their jobs due to no fault of their own, there needs to be the ability for them to be protected. Also, the legally protected right to form a union and collectively bargain so that workers have a seat at the table about their wages, about the working conditions in the mines, all of the things that we know only happen when the workers have the power to demand the change. The billionaire bosses never don't have children working, reduce the amount of hours that people work, not lock people in the mines, right? That they never give up anything on their own. It's only through the demands of working people. Establishing a legal right, protected right to form a union. And then obviously Social Security, a wage insurance system. But think of what connects all of those things together. It's an understanding that you need to empower working people. They need to have power, not just to balance out the billionaires, but to actually pull power away from the billionaires. The billionaires will never stop. So you need a system that addresses the acute problem or the problem right there in front of them, the Great Depression, but also that prevents that catastrophe from happening again in the future. So the New Deal wasn't just about addressing what was happening then. It was about preventing it from happening again in the future by limiting the power of the billionaire class. That's the point of the New Deal. And here we are, 90 years later, celebrating Francis Perkins. What they did is they built America as we know it today. Before the New Deal, it was just a cycle of booms and busts as the billionaires would take everything, drive the economy into the ditch, and then get bailed out and start all over again. The only difference was that the Great Depression was so big, they didn't know how to actually bail the bankers out this time. So we turn the page on an entire way of thinking about economics and how the country works. And we built something better, a new vision, a new deal that empowered workers. And for 90 years, Social Security has done exactly what it was set up to do. And there's this beautiful idea that Francis Perkins had. Who gives us Social Security? We do. Not a room I go to where I ask that question where everyone doesn't actually just naturally answer it. But that was a very important vision of hers. The people are going to set up an insurance system that excludes Wall Street. We don't need the banks involved at all. No billionaires. It excludes Washington, D.C. It's not going to be funded by the income tax and general revenue. It's a self-financed system. Working people pay into the system their working lives, and then it's there for us when we need it, when we retire, if we face a life-changing illness or injury, become disabled and can no longer work, or for their surviving children in the death of a breadwinner. A lifelong insurance system that is built by the people for the people. And because of that, everybody loves it. Everybody. Doesn't matter where I go or who I'm talking to. This is not a partisan issue. Everybody loves Social Security, except for the billionaires. One time, the billionaires recruited a guy to run against Social Security and was like, go after it and just say, we're going to get rid of it because it's bad. His name is Alf Landon. And if you know his name, it's just because he's the losingest president in the history of this country. So the billionaires did learn that. They were like, ooh, man, we shouldn't go after a deeply popular program straight on. So what they do is they don't try to get people to hate Social Security. They just try to undermine confidence in Social Security. So this is from a focus group. It's a very common sentiment. The economy and government are in a bad place. There's no guarantee that the money from Social Security will be there. How many of you have heard that Social Security is going bankrupt, that it's running out of money? All of those things, and it means a specific thing. It means going to zero, right? It means you're going to not get anything. A lack of confidence. Why? Because if I can convince you you're going to get nothing, then you might be willing to accept less than you're owed. If I can convince you you're going to get zero on a dollar that you paid in, and I say, I'll get you 70 cents on that dollar, just sign on the dotted line, you might even think I did you a favor. I didn't. I stole 30 cents from you. That's the game that the billionaires play. So who? The billionaires. It's always the billionaires. The same people who drove the economy into a ditch and caused the Great Depression are the same people who are waging this campaign against Social Security today because they don't make any money off of it. They can't get their greedy little hands on our Social Security money. Now I'm going to show you how. How. Lies. It's all lies. The billionaires lie about Social Security. What's the first rule of the Billionaire Destroy Social Security Club? Never talk about Social Security. What do they say instead? Entitlements. This is from a debate I did with an economist from the Heritage Foundation. It's a building in Washington, D.C., and it's filled with paid liars. They're people who are paid to lie for their billionaire paymasters to get what they want, sometimes from a debate stage up against me. And so what I did is a little unfair. She thought it was really unfair, but I was like, you shouldn't lie. I went and I downloaded her slides before the debate, and then I edited them to show how she does what she does. And then I did that before she went, and she didn't have anything else to say. It was in front of the National Academy of Social Insurance, and I'm sure it was quite embarrassing for her. But again, she should try telling the truth. We were talking about the future of Social Security. She put up a slide about entitlements. If you look at that, that is an unsustainable cost growth, right? So this is a percentage of GDP, right, that we're spending that is growing. If you put a scary red line on that, you can see if you project out, we would be spending 100% of GDP in the future, which we're obviously not going to. But you also look at the column and you see Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, Obamacare subsidies. So we were talking about Social Security. So I was like, well, I'll just take her slides and I'll make it just Social Security. And if you put a red line on that, it's an entirely different picture. That is a picture of affordability. That actually goes out to the year 2100. It will still cost roughly the same as it does today, right around 6% of our GDP. It's entirely affordable. Most advanced economies, our peer nations, spend far more on their social insurance programs than we do. It's super affordable, it works really well, and everyone loves it. That is not a crisis. That's like the best part. Everyone loves it. That's why they have to lie in order to attack it. But let's actually talk about that scary red line, because I am going to talk about Medicare and Medicaid. What is the scary red line? That right there is total healthcare costs in the United States. It's not Medicare that's the problem. Traditional Medicare does a better job restraining excess cost growth than the private sector. It's not Medicaid, the largest provider of long-term care in the country. 42% of births in the country are covered by Medicaid. It's a system for mothers giving birth, seniors in nursing homes, and people who get sick and lose their jobs and then lose their insurance because their insurance was connected to their job, which, as a sidebar, is literally the dumbest way you could set up a health insurance system ever. But that, as we'll see, is by design. So if it's not them, and that is unsustainable, right? Like, if you just track that out, not too far in the future, we're supposedly going to be spending 100% of our GDP, every dime, on healthcare. Can't do that. That's unsustainable. But what is it? There's three reasons: big pharma, big hospital, and big insurance. Big pharma. How many of you have a drug? Maybe you've taken it for years, and all of a sudden you go to a pharmacy, and the price has increased, sometimes astronomically. I see nodding and hands. Not a single room that I go to where there's not somebody who's been ripped off by big pharma. It's the same drug, the same molecule. Nothing has changed. No benefit to the person. The only thing that happened is some billionaire, private equity, or corporation bought a drug company. They have software. They go through the inventory to analyze and find what they call undervalued assets, which are drugs that they say are priced too low. And then they increase the price to what they say is what the market will bear. But I'll ask you, how much are you willing to pay for your life, the life of your child, or the life of a loved one, right? And the answer is everything you have and everything you can borrow. That's the answer. That's why that is the scary red line. That's unsustainable. Big pharma ripping off the American people. But to add insult to injury, do you know who pays for the vast, vast majority of drugs that are developed in the world? We do. It's our tax dollars that pay for the drugs to be developed at the NIH and university grants through the NIH. We develop the drugs, and then we hand the patents over to a corporation. We protect their patents with our tax dollars, and they turn around and they charge us the highest drug prices in the world. I have to say, that's a pretty dumb thing to allow them to do to us. No other country on earth allows pharma to charge whatever they want. There's also patent thicketing, where they usually surround their expiring patents with other patents that keep the prices high. I mean, when you're making trillions of dollars, there's one drug, Humira, very often, as a drug, would be one of the higher GDPs of a country with one drug. So of course They have an army of lawyers to make sure they can charge whatever they want. But really, we can, at any time, if we can get DC to listen to the people and not the billionaires, we can change it. They said, we'll never beat pharma. I moved to DC to beat pharma. I beat them once. We got Medicare drug price negotiation. They hate that. They're doing everything they can, but we keep beating them in court over and over and over again. All the different judges, because the judges are like, oh, come on, you don't have a legal right to charge people whatever you want. Obviously, the American people can negotiate. Big pharma, that's the scary red line. Big insurance. How many of you have dealt with prior authorizations? What is that? You go to the doctor says, do this thing. You go to do the thing, and another person who's not a doctor, who went to business school and not medical school, says, no, you need a prior authorization from a doctor. And you're like, who do you think sent me here? My doctor. And oftentimes they're like, no, we want you to go to my doctor. And you're like, I don't want to go to your doctor. Your doctor has a financial interest in not giving me what I want. How does big insurance make money? They take our premiums and deny our care. I will tell you, unfortunately, it's a big problem with men, that men faced with a very small amount of resistance will just forego care. Their doctor's like, you have to do this. Your life could be at risk. They get a prior authorization and they're like, ah, I'm going to just tough it out. We see that in the data over and over and over again. That's how they make money. The point of a prior authorization is they know that if they say no to lots of people, oftentimes the people just stop trying to get care. What a dumb system we allow to be perpetrated on us. That's the scary red line. So again, this is a choice. What kind of country do we want to live in? Super affordable. Everybody loves it. Works incredibly efficiently. Only people who don't like it are the billionaires who can't profit off of it. Are we the type of country that fights for this and maintains our social security system? Or are we going to allow the billionaires to privatize and wreck this system? And then we'll talk about big privatized social insurance in the future. I hope we fight back and we don't let big bad win again. But this is the myth fact, because I want you, Google everything I'm telling you. Fact check me in real time. If I say anything wrong, just fact check me. This, though, isn't me. This is the actuaries of Social Security, right? So you can go online and find these slides. Myth number one, Social Security is bankrupt, insolvent, or running out of money. Fact, Social Security cannot run out of money. As long as there are workers paying into the system, as long as the United States is a going concern, Social Security exists. Cannot go bankrupt. Does not go to zero. Does that mean there's no problem? No, this is the problem. The trust fund, which is each generation pre-funds their own retirement. And when the actuaries project out the life of a trust fund in 1983, it should have gone to 2065. The baby boomers pay in and the generation is to 2065. Unfortunately, now that number is 2032. It was 2035 just last year, but because of the Republican budget, the number has come in. Even if Congress allowed trust fund reserves to deplete, continuing income would cover 83% of scheduled benefits in 2032 now. That's a huge problem. A 17% benefit cut for everybody in the country in 8 years? It would be devastating. But it's also entirely different from going bankrupt. If you think that you're going to get nothing, I might sell you 70 cents on the dollar when actually you're going to get 83 cents on the dollar. That's actually what the Republicans are doing in Washington, D.C. All of their plans to take care of this problem of the trust fund depletion are actually just benefit cuts. A benefit cut of 17% cannot be solved by a benefit cut of 21%. That's just a worse problem sooner. They don't want you to know what the problem is, so that you don't arrive at the right conclusion. And then you're looking at this and you're like, it must be really hard to solve this problem. It is not really hard to solve this problem. It is super easy to solve this problem. Billionaires don't pay the same rate as all of us. Billionaires do not pay the same rate as minimum wage workers into Social Security. The billionaires are the problem. That's a refrain. But you probably heard this. people are living longer, and so we just need to raise the retirement age, right? People are not living longer. Some people are living longer. Richer people are living longer, but working people for the past few years have actually seen life expectancies decrease. Racial and ethnic minorities have never shared in the longevity gains, right? So in fact, what the billionaires are saying is rich people are living longer, so working people should work until they die. And working people are like, no. But you'll see over and over again, the billionaires say what they're going to do, the working people say no, and the billionaires do it anyways. That's why we're at that point again. But it's not that longevity is the problem. It's also crazy to think that people would be like, the problem is people are living longer. You're like, that's not a problem. That's like a super good thing, right? And if people were living longer, I would hope that they would get to spend that time in retirement with their family, kicking back, doing whatever they want. It's only a psychopath billionaire who's like, no, 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 now they can work longer. That's what they want. They want us to work till we die. They're like, I'll work till I'm 80. And you're like, you don't work, man. You sit at a desk and your money works for you. You try standing in front of a classroom and teaching all day. Get on a line and build a car. You're going to last 3 days. That would be reality TV I would watch for sure. The billionaires trying to do an honest day's labor. So this one, the money has all been spent. The government stole the money. Both sides do this one. Usually it's whoever you don't like. You're like, they stole the money. No, they stole the money. No one stole the money. It's there. It's there for us. $2.3 trillion in trust for us. This is the actuary. Every dollar of income is invested by law, interest-bearing securities backed by the full faith and credit of the United States. The money is there. The system works. All we need to do is solve the problem. The billionaires, $176,000. That's the cap. You only pay into Social Security on the first $176,000. A minimum wage worker pays in on all of their wages. Somebody who makes $200,000, first $176,000. Somebody who makes $80,000 a year pays in on all of their wages. Somebody who makes $200 million a year, the first $176,000. $2 billion a year, still $176,000. What an easy problem to solve, right? You're like, well, just get rid of that. What would that do? And you're like, it would solve the problem. Actually, we could increase benefits. And everyone is like, just do that. Why are we even having this debate? Because billionaires are the problem. $176,000 cap mixed with this. Not only do the billionaires not pay the same rate as the rest of us, they've also taken all of the gains of the economy for the last 40 years, since the 80s, since the Reagan-Thatcher neoliberal reactionary revolution, trickle down whatever. Everyone knows the jokes. It's definitely not money trickling down on the workers, that's for sure. But what it is that it used to be that as productivity went up, a worker produced more goods and services with technology or advancements, their wages would go up with them. So the fruits of the labor was going to the workers. And then what economists call the Great Divergence happened in 1980. And you see, productivity keeps going up, but wages are flat. Working people are not gaining. You've probably heard this over and over again, but if you just inflation adjust minimum wage, we are way behind where we were in the 1960s. The purchasing power of labor has just cratered. And all of that money that the billionaires are getting does not go into Social Security. It's above the $176,000 cap. But I just want you to really ponder how sick this is. The red line is middle class working people's wealth. The blue line is the top 1% wealth. In the 90s, workers controlled the majority of the wealth in this country. Zoom into 2021, and the richest 1% in this country control more wealth than the middle class combined. That's the problem. The problem is billionaires. This guy is the problem. He's actually the problemist problem in the world. The solution is really easy. Make the problem pay the same rate as the rest of us. But here's the problem. He knows that too. And he went to great lengths to ensure that he doesn't pay the same rate into Social Security as the rest of us. And I try to use levity, but it really becomes a bummer from now because he won. Donald Trump won. This guy spent $61 billion of fake Wall Street money to win. He spent hundreds of millions of dollars to win so that he could stand on this stage with that chainsaw and promise to take it through the heart of the Social Security Administration, which he's done. This one, the New York Times is like the absolute worst at using the passive voice. Look at that headline. Musk again misleads on Social Security. You're like, it's called lying. It's called lying. When my children again mislead me on hiding candy under their pillow, that's cute. This is evil. Elon Musk, the richest man in the world, lies about Social Security. He says it's rife with fraud. The president, Donald Trump, went before a joint session of Congress and he lied for 10 minutes. He's actually on television right now talking about Social Security, so he's probably on TV lying right now. But joint session of Congress, 10 minutes, he said, my great friend Elon has found 130-year-olds getting bent. Right? No, he didn't. That's an easily disprovable, brazen lie, but that's part of what they do. Lie. He said, we found all this fraud in the phone system. No, they didn't. They found two. But you know what they did do? Wrecked the phone system. Martin O'Malley, the former commissioner, drove the wait time from 42 minutes down to 12 minutes. You can do things if you try. If you're trying to make things better, you can. Every system can improve. They're not trying to improve it, though. Elizabeth Warren, Senator Elizabeth Warren, just did a study. Average wait time, 5 hours now. And still, more calls dropped than answered. So you wait for 5 hours, and then it disconnects you. Why? It's not because they are again misstating or oops accidentally. It's because they're actively destroying the Social Security system. They're trying to wreck it. They want to wreck it before we can make them pay the same rate as the rest of us. They know that's what we're trying to do. They know that we hold birthday parties for Social Security every year on August 14th. That's why Donald Trump is on TV right now doing the same thing. They want people to think that they are doing good things on Social Security. They are not. This is until March to March. 14% reduction in Social Security Administration staff in Montana. It's probably around 20 now. And if you go to DC, you will literally hear people be like, oh, don't worry, if we close the office, they'll just go to the next office over. And you're like, you have not been to Montana. That's really far away. But also, they know that. They know it. The point is, they're trying to wreck the system. They're closing offices. They're reducing office hours. If you get into the office, there's fewer workers there. In Lewistown, earlier on the trip, we had a woman who works helping people who are facing difficulty and are seniors. And I always forget the name of the agency. But she was telling us about something that we've heard from all over the country. People are getting paper in the mail. And it's saying they've been getting benefits for years, and it says you got to go to your Social Security office and re-verify your identity for no reason. There's no purpose to this. They go to the office. The office is either closed or there's so few workers that they say you have to make an appointment to get in. So go home and use the website to make an appointment. You go home to use the website to make an appointment. It says use this new biometric system. People fail to use the biometric system because it's new. I failed. It's hard. You got to get your whole face, by the way. That's the key. Now they're locked out of the system. It says use the 1-800 number. So they call the 1-800 number. They wait on hold for 5 hours. The call's dropped. When they finally get through, the person says, I can't help you. You have to go into the office. And you're like, that's where I started. It's a Kafka-esque nightmare by design. They don't want us to get what we've earned. And let me be absolutely clear about this. We don't just pay for the benefits. We do pay for the benefits. 99 cents of every dollar that goes in goes to pay for benefits. 1 penny of every dollar that goes in pays for the offices, the workers, the telephone system. It's our money. DC doesn't give us anything on Social Security, but they can take it away, and they're doing that. I want you to know it's not in the future. That's the big thing. I used to get like, we have to prevent these bad things from happening. And if we raise our voices together, we can prevent these bad things from happening. Unfortunately, today I'm telling you these bad things are happening right now in Montana, and we have to protect ourselves and our communities. It's not just in Montana, it's across the country. Complaints about missed payments are mushrooming, the Arizona Attorney General's office said. Connecticut agency assisting people on Medicare, complaints about Social Security have doubled since last year. West Virginia, we're seeing more mistakes made. Missouri, what gets dropped sometimes are records of basic transactions. You put in your paperwork, you're supposed to get your benefit. If you get through to a human, they say, we don't have any record of that, of your previous office visitor, whatever it is. You don't accidentally do that. And then this is the nerdiest one. There's even worse news after that. This is really nerdy, but the underpinning of the entire Social Security system that sends out 70 million-ish checks, right? 70 million people who rely on the system. It sends it out like clockwork every month. It goes out. It's this archaic system called COBOL. It was developed by the Department of Defense in the 60s. Everybody kind of hates it, but the experts are like, it's like dirt. Everything is built on it. So it's like trying to replace dirt. Everybody has tried, everybody has failed, and you have to have experts in it. The first thing that Elon Musk did with his chainsaw was fired everybody in the technology office. All of the people who know about COBOL. Everybody who knows about how this system works. And these are the experts who are telling us, we don't understand how bad it is. The only reason we haven't faced a catastrophic collapse already is because of those workers before, single workers doing the job of 10 people in an office. And the reason they don't give up is because they know people will die if they do. That is an unsustainable program. But Doge, which is still there, and Bisignano is the current commissioner, and he says, I'm a Doge guy. He's actually a billionaire who's in the private payment system. He's who would privatize Social Security. They like don't even hide it. Kneecap the mailman, complain that the mail is late, remember that you got a cousin, or in this case, you're just the guy who would privatize the system. The same playbook over and over again. Privatizing means robbing people of our money. All of our experts say when they get down to COBOL, that's when we will see catastrophic cascading failure in the system. People will not get their checks. And what we're already seeing is when that happens sporadically right now, it's not just 1 month, it's months of checks that they miss because you have to start a process to legally get your money back. Now, you are legally owed that money. So the courts will come down and say, yeah, you definitely have to pay them. But it's a process. And along the way, there's millions of people who can't miss a single check, let alone three or four checks. Not only have they turned and they're not trying to do this, they keep saying, don't worry, we're going to rebuild the entire system on AI. And listen, this is true. They replaced the technology department with a 20-year-old guy named Big Balls, and they put him in charge. They're doing it so that you know. They want you to know as they lie. They want you to know what they're doing. Wreck it so they can rob it. And that's not me. That's not my line. I stole it from the former commissioner of Social Security. This is a guy who ran the system. He's looking at what they're doing, and he's saying there's no things that they're doing that would improve the system. All that they're doing is trying to wreck it so that they can rob it. That's Martin O'Malley, the former commissioner of Social Security. So what can we do? Raise the alarm. Protect ourselves, our families, the most vulnerable in our communities, in our state. Montanans know about this, taking care of your own. Actually, the first old age pension system before Social Security was created here in Montana. Montanans understand what you can do when you work together. But I'm calling on you now to work together because you know of the oldest of the old in your community, in your faith, house of worship, your church, your book group, any network you're in. You know there's somebody who doesn't really know how to use computers. You know there's somebody who has mobility issues, won't be able to get where they're told to go. You know there's people who can't miss a single check or they won't be able to pay for their lives. Now is the time before a crisis happens to ensure that you are protected, your family's as protected as possible, and the most vulnerable in our community. Look at your bank statements. know exactly how much you should get paid and when. It should be clockwork. This much on this day, every month. The first evidence of a disruption is that the date and the amount will start fluctuating. So people will get their checks on random days and the amount will be wrong. You have to note all this down. The key is documenting everything in as official a capacity as possible. We've spoken with state legislators to try to open a portal or get something so that if something happens, you can have it documented in an official way. Other states' attorneys generals have put up portals to do this. I have been told that that will be difficult to get done in Montana, but I still say, push for them to do it. If they wrecked it, push for them to do it. Print out your Social Security statement. This also will mean that you need to log on to the system. A lot of this is do this before the crisis, before checks are being missed, because imagine the stress of trying to deal with all of this on top of not having your income. Print out your Social Security statement. It says how much your benefit is, and it has your wage history on it. Have a hard copy on that, because I don't trust Big Balls to be in charge of the data, which he is. Call your federal elected offices. And I know there's two parts of every federal office. The part that you call them and you're saying, stop doing bad things. And they're like, no, we're going to keep doing bad things. Keep doing that. But there's another part of the office, and it's called constituent services. Call your senators and your representative in the House and say, I'd like to speak with your constituent services people. Their case managers, their lawyers, their job is to ensure that you get every penny of federal benefits that you are owed. It's primarily VA and Social Security benefits, both of which are entirely at risk right now. But this is that file I was talking about. Document any disruptions in as official a way as possible. Do it before the disruption so that you have their phone number. You have their contact information. If something goes wrong, you know who you're going to contact with your documents in hand and show them and start the process, because the sooner you start the process, the sooner you can get your benefit back. Unfortunately, that's not all, though. Everything I have talked about happened by executive order, not through acts of Congress. Everything previous was just President Trump doing what he can through the office of the presidency. But now the Republican Congress has acted. This is law. For decades, I have fought against Republican attempts to do things. And I've told people, they're going to cut all of this money out of these programs and people are going to die. And now people are like, you always say that, Lawson. And I'm like, I mean, they are always trying to do it. And we have always won. We did not win. We lost. They won. They did it. It's law. It's not in the future. It's now. $1 trillion in Medicaid cuts. 15 million people lose their health care. Hundreds of hospitals, especially rural hospitals, close. Close to 1,000 nursing homes, skilled nursing facilities, close. Long-term care, which was actually a terrible system, basically non-existent to begin with, devastated. And that's not in the future, that's today. These are the hospitals in Montana. They're going to close. These are the hospitals that will close. Big Sky Medical Center is on the list. And if you're like, oh man, lucky, my hospital's not on there. Your hospital, if it's not on there, it's where everyone who went to that hospital is going to go. And now every hospital is going to be dealing with uncompensated care at much higher levels. Hospitals closing the maternity wards, right? Saying we can't afford it because the Medicare reimbursement rates in Medicare Advantage, the privatized side, right? There's the theme. United Health, the billionaires, aren't paying enough, so we can't have maternity wards. That's before $1 trillion in cuts. The devastation from this will be of a magnitude that we've never seen before in the history of this country. I talked to the historians. Go back to the Continental Army. We've never seen this much health care removed from people. It's actually always been sort of the other way. These are the skilled nursing facilities in Montana. It was already just devastatingly low. Skilled nursing facilities, this is like memory care, 24-hour nursing care. This is not something that's easily replaced. That dot in the middle, Lewistown, our first stop, that one's gone. That one's on the list. Where are the people there going to go? What is the plan? I'll tell you, there is no plan. It's going to be up to the families, if there are families, to figure out a plan. So the plan is that many of them will die. Yale Health Public Health School estimated 51,000 people per year who wouldn't have otherwise died will die because of $1 trillion being cut from Medicaid. And who are they? Seniors in skilled nursing facilities, meaning the most vulnerable people among us. Seniors on the Medicare Savings Program, people who get Medicaid money to pay for their Medicare. The most vulnerable among us, the least of us. The people who good Montanans know we work to protect. This is our community. But what the Republican budget did is traded their lives for trillions in tax handouts for billionaires. And when you call your elected Republicans, also remind them and still increase the deficit by like $4 trillion. It's almost impressive. It's so bad. They stole $1 trillion of health care, and still the greed of the billionaires, the handout to the billionaires is so big that the deficit balloons so much that treasury bonds are spiking. The question of is the dollar-based economy going to be the future of the world is deeply in question. But don't worry, it gets worse. I know, I'm sorry, I try to keep a little levity, but it's a very difficult presentation. It's the first time in my life that I've had to give this presentation where I'm just the deliverer of bad news. Remember when the workers used to have all the wealth and the billionaires didn't? In 1990, we used to have an economy where we built things and we sold things, primarily to ourselves, but also we exported things, but we built and sold things. And workers had the wealth. And then the billionaires were like, I've got a proposal. I'm going to take your job and ship it to China, and I'm going to make a ton of money, and you're not. And the workers are like, that's a terrible idea. And they're like, we're going to do it anyways. So that is what is the deindustrialization of America, the loss of manufacturing jobs in America. That's what made America great, working people. Industrial devastation. The map on the right is the economies today. Top employer in each state in 2024. All that purple, healthcare. We transitioned from a manufacturing-based economy to a healthcare-based economy, and we just cut $1 trillion out of that economy. In rural communities, you know this, the hospital is not only where you go if you break your arm, it's also the largest employer in the county, the largest provider of insurance in the county, the economic engine of huge swaths of this country, and it's gone. And just like those manufacturing jobs, when they're gone, they're not coming back, no matter how much they lie. Just remember that they had to pass a relief fund, $50 billion relief fund. That's what you pass when you're hit with a natural disaster. They had to pass a relief fund of their own bill, $50 billion to protect rural hospitals. That was because of our activism, and I'm going to call on you to get every dime you can of that rural hospital relief fund. Your Republican electeds voted for this. Now you tell them, what are you going to do about the 8 hospitals? What are you going to do about the nursing homes that are closing? This hospital in my community, I want $100 million for this hospital in my community. Stand in front of the hospital and say, you're not going to close my hospital to give tax breaks to billionaires. Demand that the Republicans who voted for this have to stand up and admit what they've done, because they passed this bill by lying it across the finish line. As he signed it into law, he said, we're not cutting Medicaid, as he signed the largest cut to Medicaid in the history of the program. But remember, Social Security was born out of the Great Depression. Unfortunately, sometimes it takes terrible news, a great shock, to wake up the people and demand a new way of doing things. Not a system that works for the donors in Washington, D.C., the billionaires on Wall Street. Not a system that answers to them and Big Pharma being able to charge whatever they want, but a system that answers to the people. The problem isn't that there's a ton of people who disagree with us. There's a ton of people who don't believe what's going on, or they say things like, well, I don't like politics. And you're like, well, politics likes you a lot. If you don't have a seat at the table, you are on the table. Everybody remember that every time. And remember that they do have money, but we have people. And when we stand united together against the billionaires, we will always win. And we always have won. And remember, out of adversity, solidarity grows. Ensure you show grace to people who might have been wrong. They might have been sneeringly wrong at you, arrogantly wrong. But then the scales fall off their eyes when they're faced with the devastating consequences of what they thought was just a game. And now their family, they themselves, their communities are devastated. So some billionaire can buy another golden helicopter. Invite everybody in. Remember that it's not a left or right issue. This is a top-bottom issue. This is the people versus the billionaires. And the billionaires are winning now. But when the people wake up, we cannot be defeated. Oh, yeah, if you spend money on the IRS, it makes money. A lot of money. Which is why the first thing the billionaires do when they get power is take that money away from the IRS. Because they hate not being able to put their ill-gotten gains into the Cayman Islands, all of those tax havens, and hide their money. But unfortunately, we're going the exact opposite direction. The increase in the deficit after this Republican budget is astronomical. I want to, and I have been, drawing the attention to the devastation in rural America, because rural America is going to get hit so hard. Rural America is like the industrial Midwest during deindustrialization. That's why I'm ringing the alarm bell as loudly as I can. But it's because Big Sky 55 exists. Get organized. Connect with your neighbors, because one voice can be ignored, but thousands of voices in a state, millions of voices across the country cannot be ignored. Big Sky 55, I work with the state organizations all across the country, and this is a professional operation that does not exist in many places. I mean, the ability to do a 1,200-mile tour and have turnout like this in all of these cities, three in a day, I am a little crazy to do that, but it was because Margie got me. She was like, how many events can you do? And I was like, as many as you can set up. And they've been holding me to that since I said it. That's Montana. It's a unique state as well. The deep labor history in this state. But Montanans have this deep community aspect and understand taking care of Montanans. Like, the history of the old age pension program is that Montana was like, we need this. We're going to do it ourselves. And then we pushed it federally and it led to Social Security. So because rural America is going to get devastated by this, and Big Sky 55 is an extremely professional operation that can, at the very least, mitigate the harms. And we should fight for every penny. Those two Republican senators have been sending the same form email and letters back to people every time. President Trump was elected by the majority of the people, and we're doing what the people want. And you're like, no one voted for this. That's why you lied it across the finish line. They won. Okay, you got it. You got it, senators. Now these hospitals are closing. What are you going to do about that? There's $50 billion in a relief fund set up for your own budget. Get every dollar of that. $100 million for each of those hospitals. Make them fight. I've been in D.C. for 17 years. Social Security Works, I've been running for 15 years. I do say this. This 15 years I've been doing this, I've never seen anything worse than right now, what we're seeing. My president of Social Security Works, Nancy Altman, who wrote the books on Social Security, she's been working in this for 50 years. She says, never seen anything like this. And if anything, you're understating it. So it is a really, really disastrous place we find ourselves. But we have to have hope in getting organized, standing up, fighting back, and telling a different story. Those eight hospitals. Organizing around the closure of those hospitals is going to give you an amazingly localized fight that is going to build solidarity community by community, and you expand out from there. People hate the idea of their hospital going away. Those are the biggest opportunities, and you have a $50 billion bucket of money that you're going to try to get every dollar. And if you do get that money, the state government is going to distribute it. So there's all these levels of the fight, but it's also really easy. We've been doing it across the country. You just stand in front of the hospital with signs that say, protect whatever the name of the hospital is. Don't close my hospital. Big Sky Medical Center is on the list. Younger people just care about Social Security just like older people. One of the biggest things is if you're older, if you're a senior, tell the younger people that when you were younger, you also didn't think Social Security was going to be there for you because the billionaires were lying to you then. And then, lo, it was there for me. I call it the Zoomer Boomer Alliance, but no joke. This is the most important thing we can do. But don't think that young people are like not on board. They're on board. It's actually crazy. Younger people think I'm not going to get anything wrongly. And also, I will fight on this issue. I care passionately about this issue. So it's not that people disagree with us. A lot of it is that we're sliced and diced up into different buckets. We listen to different sources of information. So what we need, and what Faith is working on with me, is a Zoomer Boomer Alliance. We need intergenerational solidarity to remind ourselves that we have far more in common with each other. The young people are being told by the billionaires the old people are the problem. The old people are being told by the billionaires that the young people are the problem. And the old and the young people are like, we're not the problem. You're the problem, billionaires. And that twist is what we need. So do you have to learn TikTok dances? Maybe. I don't know. Do the Zoomers need to learn how to balance a checkbook? Maybe. I don't know. But I do know that we just have to have the grace and open mind to understand that actually we're all in it together, and it's an effort. It's about effort, reaching out in those venues. But also, seniors do have a superpower, so it makes a lot of sense to organize seniors. I want the Zoomer Boomer Alliance, but you know who votes every single time? Seniors. You know who decides every single election? Seniors. You know who operate with trusted messenger status and networks? Seniors. Across the country, across communities, it's something that we hold deeply in common. So it does make sense. We have to reach out to young people, but also we have to keep organizing seniors and not shy away from that. And Big Sky 55 strategy makes a ton of sense. I always say it's Big Sky 55 plus for people 55 years and over and those who want to be 55 years and over. It's for everybody, but as a strategy, it makes sense. I'll just tell you the vision, the whole vision. It's simple. We want to reverse the economic catastrophe, the environmental catastrophe. We want to fight against racism, sexism. We want to fight against imperialism and build a future based on diplomacy and peace. It's an easy vision. It's not a new vision. You could read in the 1890s the same vision. So the vision is easy. Specific legislation, we got a ton of them. The former national president of now, Terry O'Neill, who's a dear friend, and we work together in the trenches building these pieces of legislation. We have the aspirational stuff, and we're going to work on it, but I do think that it is also really important to just remember we only lose if we forget what we're fighting for. So don't forget what we're fighting for. But also right now, we really have to mitigate the harms that this country's never seen before. And also, we have to highlight what they are. So we want to go into communities with people who might not already be with us and say, this hospital is closing. After we work with them to maybe save that hospital, we can be like, hey, wouldn't it be awesome if we never had to do this again and all we have to do is guarantee healthcare for everyone in this country? And the only people who lose are billionaires and we all win. It is a long-term strategy, an intergenerational struggle that we're all part of. Building a future for my children that I'm proud of. That's what we're doing. Big Sky Hospital is at high risk of closing, and it's the exact type of fight that you want to have right now. So I want people to lean into that. Thank you all so much.
You have just heard a talk by Alex Lawson, Executive Director of Social Security Works, celebrating the 90th anniversary of the signing of the Social Security Act. You can find more information at BigSky55.org and SocialSecurityWorks.org. This has been a Beyond the Deep End production, recorded and produced by Joy LeClaire for broadcast and archiving on KGVM Bozeman and KGVM.org. We thank you for listening and for your financial support of our listener-supported community radio station, KGVM.